This research has kind of interesting parallels to the research you just presented, although this mine was way less scientific, so I'll make that disclaimer up front. I have nothing to disclose. This research was motivated by the Penn State scandal. I'm sure you all know what happened with the Penn State scandal. The assistant football coach at Penn State was accused and subsequently convicted of sexually assaulting a number of children. What you might not know about that case is that Jerry Sandusky was reported to child welfare in the 1990s for having showered with a child. And child welfare services decided to do nothing about it, and Penn State decided to keep him on the payroll. And I just found that very surprising, and I was interested in how that happened and trying to unravel what might have contributed to that bad employment decision and whether there are sort of structurally similar decisions that happen in the workplace for which we could prevent that sort of behavior from happening and do a better job of mitigating and fixing the effects of that sort of thing. So, you know, periodically in the media you'll see other cases that are quite a bit less severe. This was still terrible, which was a teacher that was accused of pouring hot sauce on crayons in an ill-advised effort to deter one of her students from eating the crayons. And she was ultimately reinstated by an arbitrator for reasons I'll explain that makes sense when you understand the sort of legal context here and the fact that the employer wasn't prepared for this kind of problem. And this actually is a depiction of a case that I found when I was doing my research, which was a gym teacher when dealing with two students who were fighting, instead of splitting them up, decided to make a makeshift cage using a table and some hockey nets for the students to fight, right? And so in that case, it was kind of funny, that's why I included it, and because it's very depressing to read all these cases. But that turned into a very, very lengthy court case over whether he was properly terminated. So my methodology was somewhat unscientific in that I just tried to find all of the cases I could find where this issue would come up, where a teacher or a child care worker had been accused of some sort of misconduct towards a child, as well as any labor arbitration. So my initial search produced about 97 civil cases. Most of those were sort of off topic, but a subset were relevant. The labor arbitrations were very relevant. And then I just tried to figure out what had happened. Now, the first thing you need to know about employment disputes over someone's termination is that you won't see a civil case over a serial sex offender, because what happens is if you're a child abuser, you go to prison. So these weren't cases involving like very severe cases of abuse. Those people are not allowed back in the workplace. But what I did see was a lot of cases with this sort of borderline conduct where the child care worker or the teacher had admitted to engaging in the conduct, but the dispute was over the meaning of the conduct and whether the conduct was bad enough to trigger termination under the applicable collective bargaining agreement. So examples of situations that I saw were, you know, hitting a child with a purse, leaving a child on a locked school bus for a short period of time, you know, letting students fight, letting students engage in potentially dangerous activity but where they weren't hurt, you know, cursing a child. There were also a lot of cases involving sort of inappropriate language combined with inappropriate touching, and people sort of disagreed on how creepy or how bad it was, and they were trying to figure out whether this teacher or child care worker could be disciplined. They were like messy, terrible disputes, right? And this was like a terrible situation for everybody involved because, you know, the parents are traumatized, the kid is traumatized, the school administrators sort of don't know what to do, and the teacher also, as I'll explain later, it's not an entirely fair system for the teacher, because what happened was employers did not plan to ever have to deal with this kind of situation. And because they did not plan, they had terrible legal arguments available to them when they tried to eventually discipline or terminate the employee for what they'd done. And here's why I think that happened, which is I think the employers were thinking that this was a law enforcement problem. Because in all 50 states, people in certain professions are required to report suspected child abuse to child welfare services. And so employers think, well, we'll just report it to the state, and this is a law enforcement problem about criminals, and, you know, the justice system will deal with the person, or child welfare will put this person on the child abuse registry. And then the problem will be done, and we don't have to take care of it. But that's actually not what happens. Because any of you who have ever interacted with the child welfare system know that child welfare does not act in all cases. They only act in about 50% of the cases. And their decision about whether to act is based on a lot of complex factors. They have very few resources, so they have to decide what they're going to investigate and what they won't investigate. And employment-based situations are not high on their list. Because they think, well, you know, at least a parent can intervene to yank the child from this environment that's potentially bad, and so, you know, we're not going to prioritize that. But they also have to deal with legal definitions of what's abuse and what's not abuse. And so they don't act in cases where the behavior doesn't fall in their definition of abuse. So what happened in the Jerry Sandusky case was they ultimately concluded, I think wrongly, that showering with a child was not within the legal definition of abuse, even though Sandusky admitted to having done it. And the reason that is because most of the people who commit abuse are parents. And sort of as a civil liberties matter, we sort of want parents to engage in a wide variety of behaviors based on their choice, and we let them do that, but there's only one definition of abuse. And so something that we might be comfortable with for a parent doing, but not uncomfortable with for, you know, a non-parent doing, child welfare is not going to intervene, because they only have one definition, and that's the parent definition. So that's one reason why child welfare doesn't intervene. The other reason is you have to have a certain amount of evidence in order for child welfare to intervene. And that is defined in most states as substantiated. And so a case might not be substantiated for a variety of reasons that have nothing to do with whether the allegations are true. For example, like the child doesn't want to talk. Or maybe the teacher admits to having done some of the lesser things, but disputes the bad things, so there's not enough evidence to act. Or for whatever reason, there's different versions of the story. If you don't get enough evidence, then child welfare won't act. And so the result of this is that the case gets kicked back to the employer, right? So child welfare doesn't intervene, and then the employer has to decide, do we keep this person in the workplace? And they have not prepared for this. So their contracts do not define conduct that is or isn't okay in the context of these interactions with children in these sort of messy situations where people disagree about what is and isn't okay. In a lot of these cases, you would read about the parents' involvement, right? It's parents that push the envelope. It's the parents that are outraged. And so what happens is the parents will, in many cases, push the administrators to fire the person or discipline the person, even if the contract says you're not really allowed to do that, right? And so the person gets fired anyways because the parents are rightfully outraged that this sort of conduct is happening on campus. And then the teacher ends up being really outraged, right? So he says, you must be Timmy's dad, I'm Timmy's teacher. They're both kind of roughed up because, you know, it's a hard job. So I think the status quo is really bad for teachers and child care workers because it doesn't provide them with notice of what is and isn't okay. And people disagree about what is and isn't okay. And so from their perspective, they did what they thought was reasonable. The arguments they made in court were, you know, other people were doing it and they didn't get in trouble, or, you know, the administrator saw me do it and never said anything, so I thought it was okay, or, you know, a variety of things which were all legally relevant to their defense, but, you know, sort of seem problematic from a risk perspective, right? So the teacher thinks, well, child welfare investigated and they didn't do anything, so why shouldn't I keep my job? Didn't I already have due process? Like, isn't this over? I should get to keep my job. And so when the person gets fired or disciplined, they feel outraged, and so they want to bring an expensive labor arbitration or a lawsuit. And if the person's unionized, the union has a duty to represent them. The union can't just say no. They have a legal duty to represent anyone with a reasonably good legal argument. And so the case ends up in arbitration, and the arbitrator is stuck with whatever collective bargaining agreement they had. So the collective bargaining agreement might say, you know, you can only be fired for gross misconduct. Well, what does that mean? The collective bargaining agreement doesn't define what gross misconduct is, and the employer doesn't have any trainings or policies or materials saying what that is, and so the arbitrator has to figure it out. And it's often a very tough call for the arbitrator. And they also have to take into account the employee's arguments that they weren't informed or that the employer let this sort of thing happen all the time or whatever it is. And so that's why you see these employees periodically getting reinstated to their job, is because, you know, the employer had a bad legal argument because their collective bargaining agreement didn't take this problem into account. So my recommendation at the end of this paper is to treat this problem sort of the way that schools already handle fire safety, for example, or other kinds of disaster preparedness, which is to say that some of these problems can be prevented through better planning and better training, but you should also plan for what to do if this happens and come up with a plan for mitigating the problem when it arises. The first thing I think that's critically important is consulting parents on what their expectations are, because it's impossible to know in the abstract what parents want. And it's really specific to the particular constituency of parents you're dealing with. And so you really have to go through a process of asking them what they want and getting on the same page in a very concrete manner about what is and isn't okay. And that's kind of an unfun, messy process, I think, for a lot of reasons. But I think it also serves the purpose of having a two-way exchange with parents, where teachers and administrators educate parents about the realities of the workplace, and parents can explain, you know, what they want for their children, knowing what the environment is like on a day-to-day level. So once you know what the parents want, then it's just a matter of incorporating those expectations into your collective bargaining agreement and explaining them in a very concrete way in your policies, and then explaining it to your teachers and your child care workers in a very concrete way so they know what the actual expectations of the parents are. So they know what the best practices are in your community and what are the alternatives, what are the, you know, unacceptable practices. And I think through that process you will see less of the misconduct when everybody knows what is expected of them. And to update it periodically, because sometimes these disputes happen because the employer's policies are just 20 years out of date and parental expectations have changed over the 20 years. And the last thing that employers really need to do is to investigate these allegations when they arise and come up with systemic ways of addressing the problem. If any of you have worked in the child welfare service system, you know that child welfare frequently offers supportive environments or offers support in order to fix the environmental factors that are contributing to the potentially abusive situation. And that's also true in the workplace. There may be systemic factors that are contributing to the misconduct of the teacher, and if you don't address those systemic factors and just fire the teacher, you're not going to make the environment safer and better for kids. So I'd like to close with actually a personal story. Totally unrelated to this research, last year, a child care worker at my child's daycare was accused of mistreating children, and they called child welfare on her. And what she was accused of having done was holding children down at nap time, like young toddlers. You know, they're kind of restless at nap time, holding them down. And the thing that was kind of ironic about it is I had actually seen other people at the child care center do this before I put my child in the center, and I thought, you know, I don't love that, but I've seen my mother-in-law do it, so, like, you know, whatever. You know, it just seemed okay to me, right? And then the other thing that was kind of unfortunate about that child care center is the cribs were stacked like that, except for they were metal. And so when you were, like, putting the child to sleep, it sort of looked like you were, like, putting them in jail. So I think, like, the optics for that angry parent who saw it were also, like, you're holding my child in jail. Like, that is abusive, right? Because that's how it felt for that person, right? So if they had just fired the child care worker and been done with it, they wouldn't have addressed the fact that everybody in that center was more or less doing that, and these sort of environmental optical things that were contributing to the problem. And so taking a more holistic approach to these situations when they arise can help reduce sort of these disputes from happening again. And also, I mean, in that case, there were terrible reputational effects for the child care center that someone had been even accused of abuse. And so having a more comprehensive approach probably could have avoided that really terrible effect as well. And that's all I have. I have a copy of the paper if you'd like to read it, and I have my cards if you want to email me with thoughts or questions.